Welcome to another fantastic sport and lifestyle biz here on your Real Feel Good Radio, UK Health Radio. This week, we've got a racing special, horse racing and greyhound racing. First off, we'll start with part two from Nicola Curry. Part one was aired last week. And then a new guest to the show and a new sport to the show, greyhound racing. We have Rose Draper, who works for Racing Post Greyhound Television, but more importantly, is assistant trainer to her dad, up in Sheffield. Throw in our SLB Sports Roundup and we're sure you'll enjoy the show. You'll never stop this, Beth. I will never let you go. Well, who am I to say? Maybe by now you should know. You got your somebody calling. You think you're somebody, don't you? I think you're scared of keeping somebody close. Start off this week with part two from star flat jockey Nicola Curry. Thanks, Nicola, that's absolutely brilliant. And we will come back to some happier stuff, but obviously with ups there's downs, and the first downside we're going to talk about was not for you, it was for everybody, and that was obviously COVID-19, which came in 2020. It was a huge detriment to all sports, including racing, because I think racing stopped for a whole month at the time. How did it affect you personally, and how did you manage to stay physically and mentally strong when racing was so much up in the air and there was at times where you weren't racing at all?
Yeah, I mean, it was a crazy time, wasn't it? I can take a very good factor and a very down factor from it, to be honest. We were lucky in the fact I was still going into Jamie Osborne's 4 or 5 days a week riding out.
Yeah.
So we had that normality with it. So we're very lucky. We were getting up in the morning, riding the horses out. So, you know, we had a purpose. We had something to do. And actually, the nice thing about it was it actually just took the pressures of racing away for a while. So I think a lot of us jockeys, instead of looking at the downside, we took the plus side. We got to enjoy the kind of time off, not driving around on the motorway.
Yeah.
And, you know, I almost feel bad saying that because obviously a lot of people suffered very badly from it.
Yeah.
Look, financially, it didn't help anybody. But as I say, we were very lucky. We had the normality of getting up, riding the horses out every day with the team. You know, obviously we had keeper distance, but the horses had to be looked after and exercised. And then the afternoons were usually spent running. We bought a treadmill for the house, which I still own now. So that was a big factor. I made sure I went running every day on that.
Yeah.
You know, whilst we're not allowed to leave the house. And then as soon as we kind of wear, just running as much as we could. Just to, I mean, you were never going to keep race fit.
Yes.
Unfortunately, that was made impossible. But at least still riding out, we were riding out 5-6 lots a day and then running in the afternoon. So that was just able to keep that fitness up. And we had the reality, but obviously, certainly, I think after a month, we were all very much looking forward to racing, kicking back off again.
Yeah, I bet you were. Were you based in Lambourne before that, or did you base yourself in Lambourne because of it? Where are you based at the moment?
So I'm based in Lambourne at the moment. Actually, at the time of COVID, I was based in Cirencester.
Okay.
So driving down into Lambourne every day to ride out. I mean, it's only 20-25 minutes.
Okay.
And then back to Cirencester, and obviously locked away in the house then, but you'd been out and you'd done something. But yeah, I'm back based in Lambourne now, which is very near all the yards, so that's handy.
Yeah, that's absolutely brilliant. And a couple of things obviously came out of COVID. First thing was you only allowed to race at one meeting a day. Do you feel that helps and hinders different people depending on how many rides they got? And do you think it's a good thing?
I think it's a good thing. There'll be a lot of mixed comments, but certainly nowadays, I think the top lads would say different.
Yeah.
Because obviously they'll be losing out on a lot of rides.
Yeah.
But certainly a lot of people in my position, there's a lot less rides. So we'd probably end up going to one meeting for, say, one ride.
Yeah.
Then having to drive off to another meeting for one more ride.
Yeah.
And that's more fuel, isn't it?
Oh,
with the prices of everything. And to be honest, now we all talk about it, I don't know how we used to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a long old day when you could be at Newbury in the afternoon and then you could be off to Wolverhampton in the evening.
Yeah.
So it takes the stresses out of that. You know, there was always that panic. Are you going to make it? Are you going to get stuck in traffic? So then it takes out a lot of pressures for us. So yeah, I'm a big fan, I have to say.
Good. And I imagine it sort of helps with burnout as well, really.
100%, 100%, yeah.
Yeah, no.
I mean, you know, now you know you're going to one meeting, whether it's an evening or day, but that's the only kind of place you have to be. You know what time you're going to get back at, and you're not rushing off here, there, and everywhere. So, yeah, no, it certainly makes life a lot easier.
That's perfect. And the other thing I was going to pick up on was the lack of crowds. One of my friends, Lauren Hay, she works at John Joe Neil's Yard. And she looked after Sky Pirate. When he won his grand annual at Cheltenham, there was no crowd. But it took nothing away from her day. What was it like as a jockey not having crowds? Obviously, it's the ideal, but were you just happy to be racing whatever?
Yeah, it was certainly good. It took a lot of pressure off the horses.
Yeah.
You found the horses, you could make them a lot more relaxed, certainly for two-year-olds, first time out.
Yeah.
You didn't have the crowd, you know, kind of revving them up. And,
yeah.
But as I say, when you did ride a winner, it took the buzz away. There was no buzz afterwards, there was no crowd clapping you in or saying well done. And
yeah,
so yeah, we took the buzz out of racing a little bit.
Yeah.
The day-to-day meetings, we didn't really notice as much.
Right.
But like, if I remember riding at Ascot when it was behind closed doors, it was quite bizarre. There was not much of a buzz about the day. The crowds really make it.
Yeah. And someone's general question might be, does a horse really know when it's won?
I think some do.
Yeah.
I think some certainly do. If you've got a horse that's maybe not won.
Right, okay.
Like whether they know or not, but if it's been quite far out, they might not have as much, you know, boost about them and try as hard. But
yeah.
I think they probably do. Hopefully they do.
Yeah, no, it'd be amazing, wouldn't it, if they did and they could soak it all up, it would be absolutely fantastic.
That's it.
Just before we finish on the low points, because we want to make this happy, you've had a fantastic career so far with plenty more in front of you. You mentioned the injury when you've ridden out your claim. Would that be so far the lowest point, or have you had other obstacles?
Yeah, that probably has, because I was just able to keep the momentum up from losing my £3. And then I had a very good winner on Raising Sand. So I thought, right, great. That was kind of the boost I needed. If I can keep the ball rolling over the next few months as a professional without that claim, then it should make my life easier in the long run and just, you know, prove that I don't need that £3 claim for people to want to use me.
Yeah.
So that was very tough. I ended up, I think it was 3 months I was nearly out for.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And it really, really took me a long time to get the ball rolling again.
Because it's not just the 3 months, is it? From the date of injury to the date of comeback, it's proving yourself again, as you've said, to the owners, to the trainers, that you've still got it.
For sure. I think, you know, maybe if it had been 6 months before or 6 months after, it wouldn't have been as difficult.
Yeah.
But it was just very much at the wrong time, and you just had really proved even more. You can come back from injury, you're a professional now. People have forgotten about, you know, those good winners you had a few months ago. So yeah, you really got to up your game, and that was quite tough mentally.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. Well, we're going to flip the coin, you're probably pleased to hear, that we're going to go on to happier times. Straight away in with a big question, what's the highlight of your career?
I think it's got to be winning Shergar Cup last year.
Yep.
And it was my first time doing it, and it's a really great fun day with a winner or not. But I was lucky enough to ride a double and win the Silver Saddle. And
Fab.
I was lucky enough to ride for trainers that I wouldn't usually ride for.
Yeah.
And be successful, and it kind of gave my career a little boost again.
Fabulous. And it's a great event, if you ask me. As you said, it's about bringing people together. It's a team event, which sometimes puts more pressure on an individual, you know, not letting your mates down, as it were. And you're an integral part of that. You were only in it last weekend, which was fabulous to see. Again, the ladies done quite well, didn't they? They had quite a good showing. How did your first involvement in it, though, come about?
Holly Doyle was meant to be on the team, but she had to go and ride for her boss, so I got a late call-up to take over her place just a few days before it actually was due to happen.
Right, okay.
So that was very good. That was very good. I was lucky to get in that spot, and then obviously it went so well, and I was able to do it again this year.
Yeah, you've been with it since, and you love it, I presume.
Yeah, it's just such a good fun day. I mean, look, obviously we have the racing league now, but before that, it's the only time as a jockey that you're riding in a team. Obviously, I remember last year, I was in a close finish between myself and actually another girl that was on my team. But
wow.
The main thing you want to do is win, and that's for sure. One of us wanted to come out on top, but I know I certainly did.
Yeah. Well, that's what makes you a winner, that drive.
Yeah.
And keeping on with your career stats, pardon me for being a bit of a bookworm, as it were, but your career stats are actually amazing. You've got a career win, second and third, and that doesn't include fourth places, by the way, which now a lot of races are fourth place. A lot of races pay down to fifth, sixth and seventh sometimes. But for first, second and thirds, you've got 208 wins, 230 seconds and 244 thirds. So that's like sort of 700 career first, second and thirds from 2,400 races. You know, that's 30 to 33% career stats. That's absolutely amazing.
Well, I'll take that. I didn't actually know that. That was a nice bit of information to find out.
Yeah, you must be super proud of that.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. When you look at it that way, I think you can look at your stats. The general, I'd talk with my agent and the general percentage we want to keep up would be like a 10% strike rate on a general. Realistically, you're going to be about 7 or 8%.
Yeah.
But as an overall, that's, yeah, very proud of that.
Brilliant. And so you should be. I mean, it's a remarkable stat, really, that, you know, you've been in the first three, nearly three out of every 10 rides. I mean, that's phenomenal.
It'd be a lot better if we could change those seconds into winners, wouldn't
oh,
it?
Oh, well, the way I tell the young strikers at football is, I don't mind if you miss, if you're in the right position.
And yeah.
If you're in the first three, in three out of every 10 rides, and two out of those 10, you're second or third and in the firing line, you're obviously doing a lot right.
Yeah, we'll take that, we'll take that.
Absolutely. And following on from that, you've just ridden the ninth winner of the season, the year. Again, an unbelievable stat. You've had another 33 places on that, so again you've had 42 win and places from just 128 rides. That is literally bang on 33%. It just shows that even this year you're continuing that great record.
Yeah, obviously, like I would like to have a few more winners on the board, but we can't complain. And a lot of us jockeys are finding there's not that many spare rides anymore. You know, there's small field sizes. Before, you could go to a meeting, you could maybe go for one ride, but you could guarantee you'd pick up two spare rides, maybe three.
Yeah.
And they just aren't around anymore, but it's the same for everybody. So, no, really can't complain. Can't complain.
And it sort of shows that all that hard work you've done in when you were younger and the opportunities you were given but took with both hands, like at Jamie's, it just shows you, who would have known in 2018 and 2019 that we'd have had a pandemic that stopped racing for a month and cut loads of things like prize money and runners.
Yeah.
So it just shows you working hard at all times does pay off.
Yeah, it really does. It really does. And certainly in this industry, it's hard to forget that. You know, you might lose rides on horses. It doesn't mean you've necessarily done anything wrong.
Yeah.
But you got to mentally stay strong, and it comes in swings and roundabouts. When it does get tough, there'll just be that one little winner that can just kickstart it again. So it's well worth putting the work in and being as fit and as strong as you can for when the opportunities do arise. So.
Thank you, Nicola. What a fantastic interview. Part two being aired there. And it was great catching up and chatting about your time and your journey in horse racing. And after our first advert break, we're on to Greyhounds, where we interview Rose Draper. Part one from Rose about getting into greyhound racing, her love for the sport, and being assistant trainer to her dad.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltz know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltz, part of a network of 50 Regenex clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltz. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Well, everybody, this week I'm delighted to say with us is a young lady from a new sport to the radio. She is an RPG TV analyst. She's an assistant trainer and she's a graduate from Sheffield University. It's Rose Draper from the World of Greyhounds. Hi, Rose. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. It's nice to be on the show. Thank you for having me. It's great to get our great sport out there in the general public.
Brilliant. Yeah, I mean, for me, it's a fantastic sport. It's a lovely evening out for groups of people or families. And yeah, anything we can do to perhaps help promote the sport a little bit more is fantastic. But before we go back to the start and learn more about you, Rose, just tell us a little bit about yourself and, you know, what you're doing.
Yeah, so I was very fortunate when I turned 18 to get the job on Racing Post Greyhound TV, which I absolutely adore. Yeah, I was very lucky to get it straight away, basically. As soon as I was old enough, they took me on, which was a great opportunity. But my main passion is working with the dogs. I adore everything greyhounds, racing, rehoming, handling them. It's great to be around these terrific athletes. They are amazing to handle, and yeah, I just get a buzz from seeing them improve and the condition improve, and I just love that side of it. But I came out of school and my dad had always kind of told me, yes, you can go into greyhounds, but make sure you've got something behind you. So I went and I did journalism at uni. I enjoyed it. It was a great experience, but COVID happened and I found myself in the kennel 7 days a week and I've never left, basically.
Right. Fabulous. You know, I think COVID hit everyone, so it'd be nice to actually, perhaps towards the end of the interview, come on to a little bit about that, how it affected you. But yeah, growing up, tell us about the influences you had in greyhounds, with animals, and what it was like for you.
Yeah, I was really lucky to be born into kind of a greyhound racing family. I'm like a third generation in the sport. My granddad was a gambling man. He did flapping, and he kind of brought my dad and my uncle into it. They're into it big time. My dad's the trainer that I'm assistant to. I was really fortunate to kind of have some great dogs to follow when I was young, but there was one dog in particular that my granddad actually purchased just before he died. He never got to watch him run. That was Eden Star, and he caught my imagination. I'd always been around dogs. I'd always been at the track when I was young, but at that kind of age, I was about 13, Eden Star hit the track, and he lit me up with excitement. I'd never felt anything remotely like that. He was interesting to watch. He was a lovely dog to handle. And it was nice to have that personal connection as well with it being kind of a dog that my granddad bought. So yeah. From there, I was hooked. And then probably about that age, or maybe slightly younger, I turned round one night. We had them great big Sky nights on it, Sky Sports, and there was great racing. There was interviewing. It was a spectacle to watch. And I turned round to my mum when I was young and I said, I want Julie Collier's job. Now I'm really fortunate that I now get to work alongside her, but she was a massive influence for me when I was growing up. It was nice to see a woman kind of in this male dominated sport, a very glamorous woman that just was exciting to watch. And yeah, I'm very fortunate to get to work with her now. She was a massive influence to me at a young age.
Fabulous. And just going on that, if you could tell us how much influenced you. I coach, and one of our other things, we coach a lot of young, budding female footballers from the age of 9 to about 14, trying to get them into academies to end up going to be professionals. So just tell us how seeing someone like that influenced you. We call it showing them the pathway, you know, because we bring female professionals to the sessions to show the girls what you need to do to become a professional. So how much did that influence you and inspire you?
Oh, absolutely. It was inspiring to see, because at the time, we didn't have many kind of females on the telly in the greyhound racing industry. It was, and still is to a certain extent, seen as kind of like an old man's sport. So seeing Julie on there and Tanya Stevenson, who again, I'm very fortunate to work with now.
Yeah.
It was great to see them kind of in greyhound racing and going on other sports as well. It wasn't, they were kind of, Julie was doing basketball and all sorts. It was just great to see a face that you thought, actually, there is somewhere to go here. There is a career step. It's not always just going to be kind of a hard slog, seven mornings and nights a week in the kennels. There is something out there. There is kind of a bit of glamour. And it was inspiring, and it kind of forced me into going to university. That was one of the reasons I did journalism, was because I wanted to kind of have that opportunity. But seeing them out there, and I mean, they've been in the industry for a long time as well, and it was great to see that there was that kind of consistency. And I mean, even now, we get to see women on Racing Post TV regular that aren't kind of the old age that kind of you expect from greyhound racing. It is kind of the youth. You've got Anna Thompson on there. We've got some great young people getting involved in the sport. I think we've all been inspired by watching people like Tanya Stevenson and Julie Collier on the telly.
Fabulous. And going on to the trainer that you're assistant to, obviously you were born into the sport, as you said. Tell us about the trainer. Is he extra hard on you, or is he a good boss?
Well, I work for my dad, so there's no getting away from him.
Yeah.
He's my boss, and he's obviously my family. So one thing I would have to say is it is hard working with your family. We're all involved. There's like me, my mum, my dad, my brother, my nephew. We all work together, and that's great. But yeah, sometimes we'll have rows like you couldn't believe. But no, my dad, hard but fair on it. Where there has to be discipline in this sport. I couldn't tell you the last time I went out on a weekend bender. That doesn't happen. We're disciplined and we have no choice but to be, because the dogs need us 7 days a week. And that's kind of the hardest part of the job, is the pure dedication that you've got to have. And he is hard on us, but he's got to be.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's hard for everybody, isn't it? You know, he's trying to find a balance where he doesn't want to look to favour you, but then he doesn't want to be extra hard on you. I've done that coaching my kids playing football, and it is a hard balance. But you don't become a champion by being ill-disciplined as well. So he's got to run a tight ship.
Oh, absolutely. Our industry is massively based on results. You know, if you don't get results, you don't get the dogs. And, you know, there's only one winner of the greyhound race. Yes, you qualify in second and third, but you want to win. And the discipline that we show has to come out in the dogs as well. And we have to want to win. And if you don't want to win, then you shouldn't be in this industry at all.
And just to pick up on what you said, it is a results-based industry. Like all sports are, like football is, like everything is. And, but for you, it's more of a matter of fact, because the more you win, I presume the more owners you get, or the more your existing owners will buy. But you could ultimately have a dog which is running his heart out in the top races, but there's still one or two better than him. So it's about finding the key, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of where you kind of have to juggle dogs a little bit. Sometimes you might have to miss a big competition that you're aiming for because you can win something elsewhere. And I think that's part of the skill of training. And it's a skill that my dad's got down to a T, and that's what I want to learn, is being able to admit when your dog's not quite good enough and not quite at that level at this very moment, and being able to kind of take that step back. A lot of the times it's going back to basics, like with all sports. You can go full throttle, but sometimes you do need to take a step back and just look at how it's going. But it is a massive results-based thing, and most of our dogs are owned by other people, so it is pressure, and it's not pressure at the same time. You've got pressure of someone not breathing down your neck, but you've got someone else's opinion to consider as well, and you've got someone that, a lot of the time, these people are friends as well, so we want winners for them as a friend as well as an owner.
Absolutely. You said something quite key there, that sometimes you miss a big competition to go to one, a rung below perhaps, to get that win, because that will obviously breed confidence in the dog as well. And, you know, it's like, I can liken that to when we're getting our girls in and they go to Chelsea or Reading for trials, which are the closest probably clubs to us. And I say to the girls that if you get offered by Reading, take it. If Chelsea are undecided, or they say no, because if you're good enough, the big clubs will come knocking, and you still get a foot on the rung, as it were, you know. So I understand it is a brave thing for a trainer, isn't it, to miss a big competition in order to go and seek a trophy elsewhere.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of the time the media is part of that as well. You know, if they're expecting a dog to be going for a competition, it can be a lot to say, actually, we are just gonna try and win a few races at Monmouth on a Saturday night, or we're going to miss this competition and go for a category two, etc. But the good thing is, with the open race scene at the minute, there is tracks that are putting opens on every week. So there might be a dog waiting, or it could go in the Eclipse that starts next week. But actually, we're going to run it on Tuesday night at Sheffield in an open and get a few wins on its card while the good dogs are away.
Yeah.
We're lucky to have opportunity, but sometimes it can be hard to miss the competitions, and sometimes you'll be watching the final, you'll think, well, we've beat that dog that's gone and won that, we've beat that dog before. That could be the painful side, but you have to be happy with what you've done.
Yeah,
you have to have pride in the decisions you've made. You've got to support your own decisions all the time, but also admit when you're wrong. I think sometimes you can be wrong, and you can think afterwards, if you put a dog in a competition, and you can think, actually, we probably shouldn't have done that. We probably should have given him a break, or we should have ran him in a few one-off. And that's the thing, and that's where I'm still learning. And I'm very fortunate to be able to learn off my dad. My dad's been there and done it in a lot of big races. So I'm fortunate to be learning from what I consider to be one of the best.
That's fabulous. And you're right, you have to be brave. You have to back your decisions. Nobody in any form of life gets everything right all the time, but if you sit and beat yourself up on something that might have been different, you're never going to move forward. So as you said, you have to stick to those decisions.
Yeah, definitely support yourself, and the other side is the owner supporting you as well. You have to answer to somebody at some point, and the owners will support our decisions. And that's the good thing about our owners, is we have a good relationship with us. They trust us.
Yeah,
they know we want what's best, and we're very fortunate to have the team of owners that we've got in the kennel.
Brilliant. Absolutely fabulous to hear. Just moving on basically to your journey, Rose, to where you are now. We've obviously covered you were born into the sport. Your first involvement was through your family. You currently work with the dogs. But wisely and correctly, you were told by your parents you need a backup plan, which was great. You went into media and journalism. You graduated, which is fabulous, and you've now got a job with Racing Post Greyhound Television. Just tell us about the journey, though. How hard was it when you were at university? Did you manage to get any time with the dogs? Obviously, it's close to where you are. Were you living at home and still working in the kennels?
Yeah, so I decided to stay at home. I'm a girl. I like my little luxuries in life, and I could not be the student accommodation, just not for me. I like to visit my friends, but I love to come home from their student, their like uni accommodation.
Yeah.
I stayed home, so I was very fortunate to be able to kind of still work in the kennels. I did more of the racing side at night, so that I could, you know, have uni in the day and then I'd go racing at night. My university was only kind of 15 minutes from the track at Sheffield, so I'd kind of go and meet them there. But yeah, university was hard, but it was something that I'm so pleased that I did, because if anything ever happens, I have got something to fall back on. And Racing Post have been amazing with me and given me some experience to kind of back up my degree, which I'm so grateful for, because I was a young 18-year-old girl. I was doing my degree while I was working for the Racing Post.
Yeah.
So that gave me another bit of busyness. It was a very busy time when I was at uni, but they took a chance on me, and I'm forever grateful for the opportunity, because they let me use what I was learning in the classroom in workplace.
Also, massive credit to you, and I say that extremely sincerely. The fact you've got a career in greyhounds, you had a job in the media, so it would have been easy for you to switch off, wouldn't it, and not put everything in. But the fact you didn't graduate is a huge credit to you.
Yeah, I'm a very competitive person, which you have to be in this industry, but that kind of came into my university life as well. I wanted to get good grades because I wanted to be better than the others in my class. And I think that kind of spurred me on. And that's where I've learned a lot from this industry. And you want to win, but you do have to show some class in getting beat as well. I'm hopeful that that's what I'm kind of doing. But no, university, it was a struggle. I mean, I got through it, and I'm not going back is all I'm saying. I'm not going back to university. That one degree was hard enough.
Thank you, Rose. That was absolutely captivating. A brilliant part one. Cannot wait to hear part two when it's aired. And after our second advert break, we've got our SLB Sports Roundup.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
This is our SLB Sports Roundup featuring golf, horse racing, cricket, darts, rugby, motorsport, NFL, NBA and football. We start with golf and the DP World Tour held the Nedbank Challenge at the Gary Player Golf Course in Sun City, South Africa. It was won by English star Tommy Fleetwood on minus 11, defeating Ryan Fox on the final hole, who bogeyed it to give Tommy a one-shot victory. One shot further back was Shubhankar Sharma on 9-under. This week, the DP World Tour goes to Dubai for the Jumeirah Golf Estates Classic, using the Earth Course and the return of Rory McIlroy to take on last week's 1-2. The PGA Tour held the Houston Open at the Memorial Park Golf Course in Texas, and it was won by four shots by Tony Finau. Back to form, beating Tyson Alexander on minus 12, Ben Taylor was third on minus 11. This week it's the RSM Classic from the Sea Island, Seaside Course and others in St. Simon's Island in Georgia. The LPGA held the Pelican Women's Championship from the Pelican Golf Course in Bel Air, Florida. And it was won, again, a return to form by the brilliant Nelly Korda. She won on minus 14. One shot clear of veteran Lexi Thompson on minus 13, with Alison Corpers two shots further back in third on minus 11. This week, the tour holds the CME Group Tour Championship from the Tiberian Golf Course in Naples, Florida. They're using the Gold Course. Horse racing. We've done it again with our selections. The Paddy Power Gold Cup was won by our long-term fancy, G.A. Law. And also, another one of our selections, Il Ridotto, finished fourth to get you each-way backers yet more winnings. The Greatwood Hurdle was won by I Like to Move It. Our horses that we recommended didn't make the final cut, but what a great performance under top weight by the Nigel Twiston Davis, Sam Twiston Davis ridden horse. He looks to be going on to something very good this season. And also one of our favourites, Summergand, won the Rose Stakes at Lingfield. Another one that we put to you. This weekend, it's the Betfair Chase from Haydock. Aplutar, we've been telling you for a few weeks, should win that. Protectorat has a great chance. But it looks like Royal Pagai is going to run the following week in the Coral Gold Cup. The Betfair Stayers Hurdle this week, we like two at a decent price, good risk at all, and Run for Oscar. And if Time White or Boot Hill turn up in the Gerard Bertrand Handicap Chase at Ascot, they're worth a look. Talking of the Coral Gold Cup, which is being held on the 26th of November, we've mentioned that if Royal Pagal turns out and the ground is soft, even under a big weight, he will run well. We've also put to you before Corag Rambler, remastered 3-under through 5, and Our Power. Cricket, it was the final of the T20 World Cup, England versus Pakistan, and England have become double world champions after winning that final and also holding the World 50 Over Championship. Pakistan were put into bat by England and finished on 137 for 8. Sam Curran, player of the match and of the tournament, getting 3 for 28. England replied 139 for 4, and that man again probably should have been man of the match. Ben Stokes stepped up when wickets were falling around him with a brilliant 52 not out and again scoring the winning run. Darts, it's the Grand Slam of Darts this week, and look out for our normal selections. Gerwin Price, Michael Van Gerwen, Johnny Clayton, Joe Cullen, Michael Smith. Rugby, and we have two World Cups to report on. The Rugby League World Cup, England got beat 27-26 by Western Samoa in the semi-final, so didn't quite make that final. And in the Rugby Union Women's World Cup, England lost narrowly to New Zealand. England unbeaten for 3 years, but the Black Ferns unbeaten at Eden Park, their home ground. Something had to give. England held them pretty much all the way, but in the end, paid for two mistakes. Lydia Thompson getting sent off after 17 minutes. So England had to play 63 minutes with a player less. And then with the last play of the 80 minutes, when England had the chance to kick a penalty to go back to 34 all. They decided to go for the try to win it, and they didn't get over the line. Motorsport. World Superbikes are back with the Indonesian round from the International Street Circuit in Mandalika. And it also saw the wrapping up of a new world champion with a round to go. Race one was won by the current champion Toprak Razgatlioglu for Team Yamaha. Second place, Alvaro Bautista for the Ducati Aruba IT team. And third place, Jonathan Ray for Team Kawasaki. The Super Pole race was also taken by Toprak. Jonathan Ray this time finishing second. And Toprak's Yamaha teammate Andrea Locatelli taking third. Race two saw Toprak make it a hat-trick over the weekend. Alvaro Bautista was second. Jonathan Ray again third. But that second place in race two meant that Alvaro Bautista's won his first World Superbike title in his first season for Ducati. He's on 553 points. Second place current champion Toprak Razgatlioglu on 487. He is 66 points behind, with only a possible 62 points available at the last weekend. And Jonathan Ray, six-time world champion, is back in third on 450 points. Congratulations, Alvaro. What an amazing season. In fact, these three have totally dominated. They're back for the final round this weekend with the Grand Ridge Brewery Australian round from the famous Phillip Island circuit. Formula One, it was a Brazilian Grand Prix this week from the Autódromo José Carlos Passe, also known as Interlagos. This brilliant, fast circuit where you can overtake produced yet another great race, and we also had a sprint race. George Russell for Mercedes won their first race of the season in the sprint, gaining 8 points. Second place was Carlos Sainz for the Ferrari, gaining 7. And third place, Lewis Hamilton, who messed up qualifying. He started P8 but came through the field to finish third, getting 6 points. That meant that the Mercedes locked out the front row because Carlos Sainz had a 5-second time penalty and George Russell went flag full to finish and won, also gaining the fastest lap and 26 points. It was George's first win of his career in F1. Absolutely brilliant. Second place, Lewis Hamilton, again had issues with Max Verstappen. Lewis turning into turn two. Max hitting the side of him, pushing Lewis off the track, and then after the race admitting that he knew he was going to collide with Lewis, it would cost Lewis the race and only him a 5-second penalty. I'm not sure why this guy acts like this, but he does. And then to top it all off, he was let pass by his teammate Sergio Perez to go and chase down the Alpine of Alonso and the Ferrari of Leclerc. With the deal was, if he couldn't get them, he'd let him back pass, which he simply refused. The guy is such a great driver, he just leaves a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths with the sport. Third place in the main race was Carlos Sainz. So a brilliant third place for Carlos in the main race. The drivers' standings are close. Max, obviously, world champion on 429 points. And he's now 139 points ahead of joint second Charles Leclerc in the Ferrari. And Sergio Perez, his teammate. And that is why it was so important he let Sergio back past. But he didn't. One race to go. We'll see who finishes second. The constructors are led by Red Bull. They're on 719 points and are comfortable champions. Ferrari are second on 524 points, but being closed down by Mercedes, who are now just 19 behind on 505 with one race to go. On to NFL week 10's results. Panthers 25, Falcons 15, Bucks 21, Seahawks 16, Bears 30, Lions 31, Dolphins 39, Browns 17, Titans 17, Broncos 10, Bills 30, Vikings 33, Giants 24, Texans 16, Chiefs 27, Jaguars 17, Steelers 20, Saints 10, Raiders 20, Colts 25, Rams 17, Cardinals 27, Packers back to form 31, Cowboys 28, 49ers 22, Chargers 16, and the unbeaten Eagles versus the Commanders will be a result we bring you next week. So in the AFC, the East is still the best division, with the Dolphins now leading the way 7-3, with the Jets and the Bills on 6-3 after the Bills' defeat last weekend. The West is being led by the Chiefs on 7-2, and the North and the South are being led by the Ravens and the Titans, respectively, on 6-3. The Texans, who hold the worst record now in the whole of the NFL, are also in the South, and they're 1-7. In the NFC, it's the East, again, which is providing the best division out of their conference. The Eagles are 8-0, with a game to play. The Giants are 7-2, and the Cowboys are 6-3. In the West, it's the Seahawks, 6-4. The North, the Vikings are running away with it on 8-1, a brilliant record. And the South, it's the Bucks, the worst division probably on record. so far this season in the NFC. The Bucks are 5-5 with a .5 average, but they're ahead of their group. Week 11 fixtures. Packers play the Titans. Falcons play the Bears. Colts play the Eagles. Patriots play the Jets. Texans play the Commanders. Saints play the Rams. Bills play the Browns. Ravens play the Panthers. Giants versus the Lions. Broncos versus the Raiders. Vikings versus the Cowboys. Steelers versus the Bengals. Chargers versus the Chiefs. And Cardinals versus the 49ers. NBA and last week's featured results. 76ers 100. Suns 88. Hawks 117. Bucks 98. Grizzlies 106. Celtics 109. Timberwolves 107. Knicks 120. Mavericks 96. Nets 94. GSW or Golden State Warriors 116, Kings 113, Jazz 139, Lakers 116, Clippers 119, Cavaliers 117, Celtics 128, Pistons 112, Hawks 119, Jazz 125, Nets 112, Knicks 85, Thunder 132, Bucks 136, Timberwolves 117, Suns 129, Clippers 114, Lakers 101, Hawks 104, 76ers 95, Celtics 131, Nuggets 112, Knicks 121, Pistons 112, Spurs 111, Bucks 93, Golden State Warriors 106, Cavaliers 101, Lakers 114, Kings 120, Clippers 95, Nets 110, Wizards 121, Jazz 112, Pistons 108, Celtics 117, 76ers 121, Hawks 109, Knicks 135, Thunder 145, Wizards 102, Grizzlies 92, Cavaliers 124, Timberwolves 129, 76ers 105, Jazz 98, Kings 122, Warriors 115, and the Lakers 116, the Nets 103. The conference positions are as follows. We're giving you the top 10 because that who goes into the playoff stroke play-ins. In the East, the Bucks lead the way on 10-2. Celtics are second on 10-3. Then we have joint third, the Hawks and the Cavaliers on 8-5. The Wizards are 8-6. Joint sixth are the 76ers and the Raptors on 7-7. Eighth are the Pacers on 6-6. And joint ninth are the Knicks and the Heat on 6-7. The West is led jointly by the Trailblazers and the Nuggets on 9-4. The Suns are third on 8-4. And the Jazz are fourth on 10-5. Grizzlies are fifth on 9-5. Mavericks are sixth on 7-5. With joint seventh, the Pelicans and the Clippers on 7-6. And in three, in joint ninth, the Kings, the Thunder and the Spurs on 6-7. Some highlighted fixtures coming up this week. Celtics versus the Thunder. Bucks versus the Hawks. Golden State Warriors versus the Spurs. Mavericks versus the Clippers, Jazz versus the Knicks, Kings versus the Nets, Hawks versus the Celtics, Bucks versus the Cavaliers, and Nuggets versus the Knicks, Suns versus the Golden State Warriors, Trailblazers versus the Nets, Cavaliers versus the Hornets, 76ers versus the Bucks, Pelicans versus the Celtics, Jazz versus the Suns, Golden State Warriors versus the Knicks, Lakers versus the Pistons, Hawks versus the Raptors, 76ers versus the Timberwolves, the Trailblazers versus the Jazz, Clippers versus the Spurs, Suns versus the Knicks, Nets versus the Grizzlies, Rockets versus Golden State Warriors, Lakers versus the Spurs, Cavaliers versus the Hawks, and Thunder versus the Knicks. We finish on football. The Premier League, it's last weekend before the World Cup and week 16. Results: Manchester City 1, Brentford 2, Liverpool 3, Southampton 1, Bournemouth 3, Everton 0, West Ham 0, Leicester 2, Tottenham 4, Leeds 3. Nottingham Forest 1, Crystal Palace 0, Newcastle 1, Chelsea 0, Wolves 0, Arsenal 2, Brighton 1, Aston Villa 2, and then Fulham 1, Manchester United 2, with young 18-year-old Alejandro Garnacho scoring the winner in injury time. The top six in the table see Arsenal played 14, 37 points. Second place Man City played 14, 32 points, so a 5-point gap in the break for the World Cup, and Arsenal are doing themselves so proud. Third place, Newcastle. Eddie Howe's doing brilliant there. They've played 15 and got 30 points. And Tottenham are fourth. They keep coming from behind and deservedly so. Played 15 with 29 points. Fifth place, Manchester United. Played 14, 26 points. And sixth place, now see Liverpool creeping up the league. Played 14, 22 points. They're back not until Boxing Day. The WSL is back this week, though, and week 8's fixtures. Everton versus Manchester City, Arsenal versus Manchester United, Chelsea versus Tottenham, Aston Villa versus Reading, Brighton versus Liverpool, and West Ham versus Leicester. The top three in the league see Arsenal and Chelsea, joint top on 18 points. Arsenal played a game less and having a 100% record, playing 6. Their goal difference is 17. Chelsea, having lost 1 to Arsenal, have played 7. They also have 18 points with a goal difference of 11. And Manchester United are now third. They've now lost a game to Chelsea. They've played 6, 15 points with a goal difference of 12. A quick preview of the World Cup that starts very, very soon on Sunday the 20th of November from Qatar. We'll give you the 3 group games for England and 2 for the teams we think will dominate or will win it. England play Iran on the 21st of November, USA on the 25th, and Wales on the 29th of November. Argentina, who we are backing Lionel Messi to win his first World Cup in his final World Cup. They play Saudi Arabia on the 22nd of November, Mexico on the 26th, and Poland on the 30th. And then Brazil, the other South American giants who we think will push Argentina all the way. They play Serbia on the 24th of November, Switzerland on the 28th, and Cameroon on the 2nd of December. That's our SLB Sports Roundup. Well, everyone, that's the end of another brilliant, brilliant show. It's so amazing when we can bring new guests to that. And we did with Rose Draper, the second interview on today. Assistant trainer to her dad at their Greyhounds yard, and also a journalist and working on racing post Greyhound television. And of course, we started with part 2 from Nicola Curry, star flat jockey, about how her career has panned out. I'd like to say thank you to you, the listeners, who we are so appreciative for you tuning and you keep us on the air. And also to Johan, Raffaella and the team at UK Health Radio for giving us this amazing platform. We'll see you all next week. Tonight I'm gonna have myself a real good time. I feel alive. Good time, having a good time. Shooting star leaping through the sky.